But we can turn it around, or can we? Can we do it in time? Well, if you wondered that question, especially during these last 100 days or so, as we have been forced to look at the source of our energy, coal, first of all, don't forget that disaster that we had back in April with a coal mine tragedy, some 20-something miners, I think it was 29 miners, lost their lives, and then right on the heels of that, Earth Day, no less, in April, we had the Deepwater Horizon explosion and sinking and ensuing environmental and human and marine disaster. So what do we do now that we realize the dirty side, the dark side to our oil addiction, and how we cannot just continue to drill ever deeper, ever farther out in the ocean, 5,000 feet down, we've learned, is a little bit difficult to maneuver when we do have a problem. Well, there's a new movie out. It's a documentary, actually, but I call it a movie because it's not dull. It's not dry. It's really fun and funny. It's got great animation. It has a great, friendly, funny host. And it has a great story behind it. So I'm really pleased to welcome to the Green Front the visionary behind this film. It is called The Next Frontier, Engineering the Golden Age of Green. I even like the title, very catchy. Ruth Blanning is joining us. He is with the Professional Engineers and California Government Association or Organization. And that was one of the surprises to me, that engineers were behind this. Usually it's environmentalists or media people. So welcome to the Green Front, Bruce.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
You really have a great product. Speaking of products, as I mentioned, I'm very pleased with what you've produced. I was fortunate to be at a screening a couple weeks back in San Francisco at the Academy of Sciences, so a huge, full-room screen. It was really a great place to see it, and then to be able to meet the principals and congratulate you afterwards was a real honor. I really got so excited about this film, as you know, that I ran up to you and said, congratulations, come on my show and tell me how I can help get word out, because it's less than an hour. I think it's 57 minutes in all. I learned a lot, and I consider myself to be pretty educated on the Green Front. I try to keep up, but you just presented it in a way that was very easy to follow, very colorful in every sense of the word, and just very accessible. So tell us how long ago you and whoever else was behind this came up with the idea. What was the need that you were trying to fill and, in fact, have done?
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words. We like our product, and I'm glad that you, and I hope other people like the movie as well. We started this about a couple of years ago, and in the past, our organization has sponsored documentaries, funded them, got involved in putting them together on infrastructure projects, something you'd more expect from engineers, bridges, the Bay Bridge, and other projects like that, and tried to put out entertaining and informative documentaries, which have played pretty well. For this one, we took a look at climate change, at energy, at our reliance on oil and coal, and found while a lot has been done on that, something that hadn't been done, as we saw, was really tying the pieces together to determine if we can break the dependence on oil and coal and other fossil fuels, which, of course, as we dig them out of the ground and burn them, add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere and hence contribute to climate change. But also, as we've seen recently, and as you alluded to, it has other side effects of, for example, what's occurring in the Gulf right now. So could that be, that tie be broken and be replaced with renewable energy? Is it really practical to do that, to use clean energy to supply the world's energy needs, not cutting energy back so that we, you know, get cold in the winter and turn the lights out and turn the heat off, but to actually meet the energy needs? And if that can be done, how can it be done? How can it be economically feasible so that ultimately it would contribute to the economy? And what role the United States could play in developing those new energy technologies? Because the rest of the world is doing that as far as solar panels and wind turbines and electric batteries for cars, for electric cars. Those kind of things are being developed elsewhere. And we got to wondering, can we meet the energy needs, and can the U.S. become once again a leader in an important field, a developing field, rather than going back to depending on others and importing what they produce and becoming economically as well as politically dependent? So that was what kind of generated the film. It was more an inquiry. The film itself, as you know, is a journey with our host is Becky Worley, who's a technology reporter on ABC's Good Morning America. And Becky starts out with our camera folks to see what is being done elsewhere and can we actually develop enough clean energy, and if so, how and where, and what are the dead ends, too, because we found in going through the steps of making the film that there are some things that are being tried that aren't productive, and we shouldn't be putting our efforts and our money there. So that's kind of what generated the film from the beginning and the story that we're telling in it.
And interesting that you had to go offshore. This is not, a made-in-America film only. I think you probably did some of your shooting here, but you really had to travel far and wide to find examples, and yet this is definitely tailored to an American audience. So it's, I think, if nothing else, and it does send a lot of messages, very important, all of them, but hopefully this will ignite the competitive spirit in this country, which is as all-American as apple pie and plenty of oil.
Yeah, we interviewed some venture capitalists, and one of them made the comment that the development of the Internet was worth billions, and he says, oh, this clean energy, it's trillions. It is a huge economic opportunity for somebody, and as you say, we went overseas, and even though some clean energy efforts are being made here, solar, for example, right here in California, there's a large solar installation down in Southern California. So other countries, as well as U.S., is looking at solar. But for wind and for tidal, that is tying up energy to the changing of the tides, that's being done elsewhere. That's not really being emphasized here. And so we went elsewhere to see what are other countries doing, what's going on in Denmark and Ireland, which are two of the countries we visited, and what technology is being developed there, and do we want to get involved in that, which is more a policy decision. I mean, obviously our film makes recommendations and suggestions by those we're interviewing, not by us, but the people we interview feel pretty strongly about this, and it points a direction that the U.S. can go if we wish to in an arena that generally we're not really involved in right now.
And I like it because it created a vision, and that's what we need to do, is it not, you know, is see what's possible, and yet it was not too utopian. I mean, you did talk to the people who are trying to build wind turbines in their yards or on their farms and hear about some of the real-world challenges that we're likely to face as well. And so you didn't sugarcoat it, and yet you did show what's possible. And I guess in the end, this really is an engineering challenge.
It's an engineering challenge as far as building the stuff that needs to be built and improving it. How do you make batteries for cars lighter and more powerful and so that they become practical? And then how do you make them economical enough that if you mass produce them, the car becomes competitive? I saw just yesterday GM announced the Volt is going to come out, and that'll be their electric and gas combination car. I think another company has already put out one that is purely electric. And the price for that with the federal rebates down around $30,000 for a car, which is getting toward the competitive range compared to the straight gas guzzlers. So there's a lot happening already. It's, we found one thing in the film is it's not a matter of developing new technology. The technology is pretty much there. It's a matter of improving the solar panels, making the wind turbines more efficient, making the electric cars, the electric batteries more efficient, and less costly when you mass produce them. So it's not so much new technology. It's a matter, and this is where the government gets involved, at least has in these other nations, of bringing the technology into mass production and to the people who will then want to use it and potentially exporting it so that other countries want to use our products for a change instead of the way we've been doing things in other fields.
And I guess a real key here, what you're talking about, is scalability. And you mentioned GM and the Volt. I was just reading an article about GE, how, you know, their Eco Imagination program has been quite successful. They've really put themselves out in the forefront, and they say, we do scalability better than anyone else. So that's really what we need to see, is that, yes, it can work on a small scale, but it can also be applied, you know, much more broadly. And that also reminds me of a comment I heard Shia Gassi of Better World Car Solutions, Electric Car Solutions. That's the concept of having, you know, changeable battery stations, and you don't have to own the car. You buy the miles, and the battery is free. And he talked about how the difficulty in getting, you know, really scalable investment is people want to know, well, if this is, you know, the silver bullet, okay, we'll invest, but how do we know it's going to be? And what I think your film shows is it's not going to be one silver bullet. It's a bunch of buckshot. It's a lot of different solutions, but we have to believe and invest in some of the better ideas now, or we're not going to get there from here.
It's a necessary combination, I think, of both government and the private sector working together, and government setting the policies, and as you say, convincing people that those policies are going to, and those programs are going to be in place for a while, so that if you invest in it, you don't get the rug pulled out from under you. We saw, for example, in Denmark, the government getting behind a program involving wind turbines or windmills to generate energy, and then letting the people at the local level purchase the windmills, but knowing the program would be there, subsidies would be there for a while till the windmills get going, and that way people could actually make money. If you put up a windmill on your farm, you could make money from the selling the power back to the grid. And so it was everything from the federal government working down to the local level in Greensburg, Kansas, which is in the film, a similar kind of operation done at the local level. The city decided to switch over because of after a tornado, they had a lot of rebuilding to do.
And they wanted like the whole town,
over. Yeah, it all got wiped out. So where do we start from here? And they decided to go to clean energy, particularly windmills, because that part of the country gets a lot of wind. And the people investing in those sources of energy and finding it to be profitable as well as clean energy. Because one thing about the clean energy, whether it's solar power or wind, the energy's right there. You don't need to dig it out of the ground or drill it out of the ground and transport it and refine it. The energy's right there. It's how do you use it and how do you put the installation in, which takes advantage of that. And that's a combination of improved technology as you move along. But government policies and programs that say, okay, we're going to invest in this, or we're going to subsidize it for a while, or we're going to put in the rules that you can be convinced it'll be around for a while if you invest in this. And then the venture capitalists come in and with some money and have some confidence that the program will be there. So it's a combination of factors. You have to have a lot of folks pulling together and on the same page. And that's kind of what the film is about. How do you put it all together and really create economic opportunities? You don't, as I said at the beginning, turn out the lights and cut back on the energy needs. You say, here's what our energy needs are going to be in the future, and they're going to be much greater than they are now. How do we provide that and stop what we're doing now, which many believe is sort of gradually destroying the planet with the climate change that's resulting from the increased reliance on oil and coal.
And as you're saying, it's not about sacrifice as much as smarter solutions. That said, there is a role for conservation, and we could do a lot better as Americans. We're still pretty wasteful.
Right, and so much can be done when you build buildings, and we're finding a lot of that out with the triple pane windows and so forth. As you build facilities, how do you make them more efficient? We talked to folks, back in Kansas, where they put a couple hundred feet down, they put a pipe into the ground and bring it back up. And one thing about the temperature underground, it's 56 degrees in the summer and it's 56 degrees in the winter. And either way, you can use, by running water through these pipes under there, you can use that to provide energy for yourself because of the difference in temperature. And so there's a lot of things can be done on an individual basis to make the energy use more efficient and not have to turn on the power, but generate your own, and solar panels and various other techniques like that individuals can do.
And Greensburg, Kansas is such a great story. In fact, there's a special I've been watching sporadically on Planet Green. They're documenting the whole transition, you know, building from the ground up, you know, a green community. And it's a great microcosm of what's possible. And what I love, you have a couple of individuals from Greensburg in your film. I remember one guy in particular, I may be misquoting him a bit, but the essence was, he said, I'm as Republican as they come, and I'm not a guy who you would have called, you know, a tree hugger, but I'm now as green as the shirt I'm wearing, which was a bright Kelly green shirt or something to that effect. Like, you know, it's not about politics, folks. It's seeing the realities, the practical realities that can convince even the skeptical that this is something we not only should embrace, but must.
Yeah, and they made that point repeatedly, the people we interviewed. It's not a matter of whether you're a red state or a blue state or what your political philosophy is and whether you believe that we're damaging the planet or not. There's economic opportunities here, and somebody is going to make a lot of money on developing these new sources of energy, if only because we will eventually run out of oil or it becomes more and more difficult to get it and it becomes more expensive, that the solar and the wind and the other sources of energy are going to be tomorrow's energy sources. And that's a matter of who's going to develop those and who's going to make the money doing it. And as a country, we can do that, or we can allow others to do it and sell it to us, and they'll make the profit, and we'll have that drain on our economy as we have with our current energy use. So that's a, there's a story there of economics, if anything, more so than politics, that is, I think, worth telling and for people to understand.
I did a program on the Air America Network between 2004 and 2007. It was the same format as this, interviewing green leaders, first on a weekly, then daily basis. And my slogan was, greening the red and blue states one show at a time. And that was during the height of the red versus blue. It's like, folks, this is a sideshow here. Let's get on the same team. Let's get busy. It's really about how green are we going to get or not, or we'll fade to black.
Well, I think the different interests as you develop clean energy can be addressed, whether you believe we should because of what we're doing to the planet, or you believe we should because there's money to be made, there's green money to be made out of green. However you view it, it's a worthwhile endeavor, and it's just really a necessary endeavor. We have to do it. Somebody has to do it, and it might as well be the United States because it's being done. Other nations are investing a lot of money into developing the clean energy, even the ones that are still building coal plants at one a week or putting their money and their research into developing clean energy. They see it's coming, and they're doing it.
How encouraged or perhaps discouraged are you, Bruce, in the wake of the Senate really caving on the climate change legislation and putting it off indefinitely, really, at a time when, you know, there's such a, you know, well, strong picture being painted of, you know, what the need is, given the Gulf oil disaster, given, you know, tornadoes touching down in Riverdale, New York, when I was there last week, you know, really weird weather. There's so many signs that some, you know, bold leadership is needed, and yet, once again, we're missing that. So it's kind of a discouraging time, and yet, you know, if you're looking for a perfect storm to raise public awareness, if this isn't it, I hate to think what it will take.
Well, I think things like that, particularly political things like that, bills that are up in Congress kind of come and go, and they'll get stopped for a while, then they'll get picked up again, and that will develop as the public mood and the public understanding develops to saying we need these kinds of things. That'll be reflected in legislation. We have a measure on the ballot this fall, Prop 23, which would require the abandonment of everything that's been put in place so far as developing renewable energy, and so the people will vote on that. And if they were
hopefully
to approve
it,
if they approve it, it'll be a big step back. But I think you're going to see, even though there's going to be a lot of money behind it by those who
already
they want to continue relying on oil, and that's where they make their money, and so they'll be supporting the measure. But the idea is to, I think, over time, hopefully sooner rather than later, have people understand what the real issues are and what the alternatives are and what the downsides are of continuing to do some of the things that we've been doing that aren't a good idea anymore. And if the people understand that, then the ballot measures will take care of themselves, and the bills will pass, and the policies will be implemented, and good things will happen. It's I think generally we've seen on most issues when the public understands it, the right thing gets done. It's just a matter of increasing that awareness.
Well, now you're touching on my passion and so many others, and that is to educate, inform, motivate, activate the American people. And, in fact, in reading, you know, blogs, comments on, you know, where was the Senate on this climate change bill, what happened, you know, they said there really was not, you know, a muscular, strong, you know, dynamic, vital force behind this, like there was for health care reform. And the reason is, you know, we haven't really developed the solid support and demand for, you know, the transition to cleaner energy. I mean, our president announced the need to do that in his Oval Office speech last month, but didn't quite give us the green print on how to get there. So clearly there's a gap between what scientists know, what engineers know, what some politicians know, what, you know, practically all environmental activists and organizations know, which is we have to make these changes. But, you know, that's the big challenge, is getting the masses, you know, mainstream Americans, to really understand what's at stake so that they demand cleaner, greener, as I say, policies, programs, products, politicians, presidents. And that's the gap that this movie addresses. I know I've tried to help fill with my programs. Because if we understand what's at stake, and that it's no longer really an altruistic save the planet, save the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees kind of thing, although those are all good things worth saving. It's really about saving our own asses, pardon the expression. I think I can say that on internet radio. And what will it take to, you know, really awaken the slumbering masses to that reality? Because that is the reality. In the selfish interest.
Well, that's kind of what the film is about. At the end, we could have put in something about what happened in the Gulf because we hadn't quite wrapped it up yet and decided not to refer to any particular event, because the idea of the film isn't to say to people, oh, gosh, you've got to do this right now, or here's, you call your congressman about that. It's here's the picture. Here's what's going on. Here's what can be done, and here's how to go about doing it, and just make them aware of that. And then as bills come up in Congress or propositions get on the ballot or events happen around the world, we try to help sketch a view of whatever you're going to do in a bill. This is the problem, and these are the kind of solutions that bill should address. And so that's kind of where our film is, and we're just now getting into the marketing phase and hope to get it shown across the country. We're talking this morning to a marketer who says he thinks he can get it shown internationally because he's done this with other films dealing with this kind of topic. And so the more people that view this film and other things like it, the better, and people will get that much more of an understanding of what's going on. And as you mentioned, when we do these films, as we've done with the previous ones, we try to make them entertaining. We get the laugh moments in there, some chuckles, so that people will stay interested and realize that this isn't all doom and gloom. It's a problem, and challenges have opportunities, and opportunities have solutions, and that's kind of what this is about.
Right, and you also are helped by some great animation, which describes some of the, you know, technology behind solar and wind power, for instance, with some funny characters, and it yields some laugh-out-loud moments, which are needed.
Charlie Canfield's our animator, and he's done animation in our previous movies. He's won 2 Emmys for it, and one of our documentaries has got an Emmy, too. I mean, it's a very, very successful approach that he uses and that these movies have had. And this one, I hope he gets another one, because, as you say, Charlie did just a great job of the animation on this, to keep it entertaining and to keep light moments in there and to have some chuckles in among all the serious points.
And so you had a great host as well. Becky really did a great job of, you know, asking the questions, sometimes playing devil's advocate.
We took her all over the world, and really she was in search, as we were, of the answers, and as they developed, that's what the film shows. But she's terrific. She did a great job.
You had a great team all around, so congratulations again. So in our last few minutes, you know, what are your marketing plans and media plans so you can really get this out there and it just doesn't gather dust on a shelf somewhere, because it really does have so much potential to break through to audiences that otherwise have not necessarily really focused on these issues in a deeper way?
Well, we're going to start with the two markets. I mean, the goal is to get it, first of all, on television wherever we can. And the two previous films have been shown now to about a third of the country, mostly on PBS, some on network affiliates as well. And that's about 100 million people that have had it available to them in their homes. Not that I wish they all viewed it. They haven't. But, I mean, it's been shown in those areas. We think this will be broader because those were about bridges. But we had somebody who's marketed those domestically that we've used on those, and we'll be working on this. Plus, we have a woman who has handled it with PBS. Yes, where we had the broadest distribution, and she'll be doing that. We're also talking, and I think we pretty well nailed down who's going to be doing it, to folks who deal with the cable channels, where we have not, or cable networks, where we have not gone before. We want a cable network to pick it up. And then internationally, there other countries will be interested in it, they felt, particularly Europe, because the film is in English, although that could be changed. So we're really looking at mass marketing on television and every type of television there is, and then the other area is schools. Our previous films, we tried but didn't really crack into the junior and senior high schools and university arenas, but we really want this one to be shown in the schools and become part of the curriculums at the senior high and university level, because I think there's a lot of information there, and it should fit well into many of the curriculums and the programs they have there. So schools is also a target.
Absolutely, and since this documentary is about the bridge to the future, that's a especially critical demographic, and that's younger people who are going to be dealing with this. But as I say to my fellow baby boomers, that does not let us off the hook. We have several wasteful decades ahead, and we helped create the problem only recently, knowingly, fairly recently. But we need to help, you know, dig out before we just say, okay, guys, good luck, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We, as you say, we've created the problem, not knowingly, but certainly the what's happening to the world is contributed to by the way we've used energy, and we have an obligation to fix it for ourselves, but also for the kids and grandkids.
Yeah, and we know enough now. We may not have all the answers in terms of what climate change will bring, but, you know, we know enough to act, and then, you know, there's, of course, Al Gore and An Inconvenient Truth and his Professor Revelle, and so, you know, there have been some working on this, you know, Jim Hansen, you know, since the 70s. So I think you have to be living under a rock to not be aware, and yet if only information was alone was the key, we would be farther along. I think you have to have that, you know, right combination of information and inspiration and motivation, like the Gulf oil crisis. And, you know, this is the crisis that people have mentioned to me it will take before people really pay attention. Let's hope so.
Indeed, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much, Bruce Blanding, for being with us and for envisioning this film and for, you know, really executing it in such an excellent fashion. Really want to applaud you for the thought, the effort, and the execution. Well done.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate the kind words, and now we'll see how many people we can get to view it.
I'll do my part to spread the word. We've been speaking with Bruce Blanding. He is with the Professional Engineers and California Government Agency, and also one of the visionaries, one of the sponsors behind this film. Again, it's called The Next Frontier, Engineering the Golden Age of Green. And we're speaking to you from the Green Front. The sustainability frontier better be the next one, or it may be our last, as I've said from time to time. Thanks for joining us so you can be educated, informed, inspired, motivated to act, and tell your friends about the Green Front. It's kind of the best-kept secret on the Internet in the Green Zone, and want to spread the word because I don't want to talk to myself and just my green friends want to try to reach beyond the choir. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. Have a great green week. Talk to you next time.